same agenda, so I have a draft.
Okay.
B-R-A-U-N. I'll probably have to correct the permit.
It was like a typo.
It's 8:45. We'll call to order the Gage County Board of Supervisors. Please rise. Pledge of allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Open Meeting Act is posted on the southeast corner of the wall. Attendance by observation, Juergens, Dorn, Adams, Lytle, Byers, Setzer, Bauman will be absent all day. First thing on the agenda is a consent agenda, which is a general agenda. Approve minutes of meeting held November 28th. Approve all claims through December 12th in the amount of $405,949.64. Approve and place on file correspondence received. Approve district court summary fee report and the register of deeds fee report for the month of November 2012. Approve permit number 925 for the Tile Roadside Outlet Agreement for 485 Capital LLC. And there is a typo here. It is Michael Braun, B-R-A-U-N, to install tile line to replace grassed waterways. East side of east, northeast, and east. Southeast Section 14, Township 1, North Range 6 East, Paddock Township. Approved permit number 926, utility permit for Delford Slake to install electric line open trench southeast quarter of Section 2, northeast quarter Section 11, Township 2, North Range 7 East, Blue Springs, Wymore Township. Approved permit number 927, utility permit for Waldo Farms to install an electric line Section 30, Township 5, North Range 5 East, South Northeast Quarter Section 31, Township 5, North Range 5 East, Grant Township.
I would move that we approve the consent agenda.
Second.
Moved by Byers, seconded by Dorn. Discussion. Vote. 6-0 to approve. Comments from the public and requests for future agenda items? Jane Ford Whithoff, Public Health Solutions. Update on Public Health Solutions priority issues. You're up. Yeah.
I thought you were going to take more time. Well, really nice to see you. I try to come periodically to just let you know what is going on. And I have a guest with me today, and that's Shirley Terry. Shirley is the person that I hired to head our Healthy Pathways program, which is probably the most significant thing that we're doing in recent years, and we're the only ones in the state to do it. Mm-hmm. And I'd like her to talk a little bit about it and tell you about it. And why don't you do that now, and then I can do the rest of my thing.
Well, we're starting a new program called the Healthy Pathways Program, and it's funded by a HRSA grant and some Medicaid funding. And what this program is, it's a free service for the residents that are in our district. It's significantly, it was initially set up to help the 6 critical access hospitals decrease their inappropriate emergency room use. We have some hospitals that even have as high of an 80% range of people coming through the emergency room, and it's an inappropriate visit. Could have been handled at a doctor's office. So we know that when we're talking Medicaid funding, that's costly for taxpayers. That's costly for the emergency room staff. It's costly for the hospital if they don't get compensated for that care. So this program is designed to, we'll get referrals from the hospitals. Once we get those referrals, we have nursing case managers that can kind of follow up with those clients, hopefully, you know, decide what barriers are making them not go to their doctor and end up in the emergency room instead. A lot of times if they're in the emergency room, there's a lot of other things going on, maybe in that family, maybe there's housing issues, maybe there's food issues, those kind of things, so our nursing case managers can help with all of that. Sometimes people end up in the emergency room because they did go to their doctor and they got medications, but the medications were too expensive. So then they're not taking the medications as they were directed. So we can help them with some medication programs that are already set up through our pharmaceutical companies, but we can help them with the applications that are pretty complicated to go through so that they can get on those medications so that we can keep them out of the emergency room and get them healthier, too. So we can also help with just any concerns that doctors or dentists have about clients that come in that just need a little extra assistance. They're thinking maybe they don't understand what they're telling them for their discharge instructions, either coming out of the hospital. It's not to take the place of the doctor's office. It's not to take the place of the emergency room, but it's to help kind of triage so that we have people more appropriately using our emergency room. Questions?
Are you working more with the hospitals then or more with the patients?
Initially the referrals will come from the hospitals, and then we'll work with the patients.
Okay.
And patients can refer themselves, too. And we do get calls a lot about, you know, I was prescribed this medication, I can't afford it, you know, can you help kind of thing. And so we have a lot of resources that we can go through to see, you know, some are lower income, some have a higher income level. So we can just kind of brainstorm through that. And all pharmaceutical companies have, where they'll give medications for the indigent. But the application process is really complicated. And each company, of course, has their own application and their own, you know, stipulations. So we did purchase a software program that makes that easier, so that we can help families get that done right away instead of getting, you know, four or five, you know, rejects and then finally getting on it.
This is a tremendous program, not only for those who have tremendous needs, but for the hospitals that can reduce costs substantially, which will affect all the rest of us and the fees that we're charged when we come in to the hospital. So this is a very good program for individuals in need and for those providing services.
Right. It was modeled after a program that is going on in Lincoln called ED Connections, which was started with one hospital for the same reason, uncompensated care. It was so successful that both hospitals, and they started with a grant, both hospitals joined together and they work together to support this program now because it saved them over $1 million in just a few years from uncompensated care. So they're partners in this program in Lincoln right now.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I get to tell them about the staff then. She's done a great job in hiring additional staff. We have very experienced public health nurses that are going to be joining us, and one is from Beatrice, mm-hmm. Right?
That's right. Becky Hansen joined our staff just this week. And she grew up in Beatrice and then went to Omaha for a while and then came back to Beatrice and raised her children in Beatrice. And then we have one other nurse, and both of the nurses we've hired have worked in public health for quite a long time, either at Lincoln Lancaster County Health Department, and have a wide range of nursing experience, which is really important. Public health nursing is different than hospital nursing, than doctor's office nursing. So I'm excited that we have one that has a strong mental health background, because a lot of the times emergency room visits are because of mental health issues. So we'll be able to, you know, kind of help tackle some of those. And it's not going to fix everything, but I feel like it will help a lot.
Okay. In relation to that, one of the things I wanted to mention first off is that with Lincoln, when they did the ED Connections program, it was a little easier for them because they had all the resources that they would need. One of the challenges we have in our district, as you know, not so much here but maybe other places, is a lack or inaccessibility of some services by everybody. And so that ends up causing extra burden on the ERs. I was going to give you an example. I think I was going over the information for 2010, and of residents in our district, $53,000 was spent in ERs just for analgesic care for dental problems. $53,000. Now, they didn't even get their teeth taken care of because that's not what emergency rooms use or do. And to me, it's indicative of some of the problems that we have, for example, with access to dental services and the availability. So part of what we will be doing, particularly in relation to the money we got from Medicaid is working with the community to try to develop those services or find other ways of meeting the needs. And so one of the priorities for us is working with the dentists. So I just wanted to mention that. Also, you know, there's been a lot of discussion about, well, for us, about locations in each of the counties. You know, we serve five counties, and when you're in one county, there's a tendency to overserve that county and not serve so many. So we were, you know, we're establishing, or we have these offices in other counties, and we don't have one here. And I wanted to tell you that sooner or later, there's going to be an office here. It's going to be either a health hub or something a little bit more involved. And we did get money from the state of Nebraska to increase cancer screening because we're in an area where there's high mortality and low screening levels. So we might use that money to help establish an office here. So hopefully that'll come to be. I want to mention that we just finished our skip flu clinics, and you know we immunize in the schools because immunize children in the schools because they're one of the biggest vectors of flu. If you can get them taken care of and healthcare providers, you're kind of in like Flint with the communities.
I think we need to check. So I think we had a request for some funding from Gage County, and I think we're the only county that hasn't funded anything on immunization. So I think we need to have Matt, and we need to check Michelle to see what we did on the budget on that. So we're the only county that's not providing some funding for that.
Yeah, I would appreciate that. We immunized 2,000 people in our program, and you know, that's really pretty significant. And I had I haven't done my comparisons this year, but I did last year, and we easily double the immunization rate in the schools by doing this program. What I did is I compared what's going on in surrounding districts where they don't have a program in the schools, and I looked at those levels plus and in terms of the levels that we have, and we doubled the immunization level. So that's really good. I don't know that it's the perfect number. I'd like to see more immunized, but anyway, I thought that was really good. Let's see, and we appreciate the cooperation of the schools. Another major thing that we're doing right now is our needs assessment, and I think some of you were kind enough to participate in our key informant interview to give us a little bit different view of what you saw as the needs and the problems in your county, and I appreciate you doing that. Very soon what we're going to do is have a district-wide meeting where we're going to meet with all the community health service or community service providers, and that's Health and Human Services. And we're going to try to engage them in planning because I don't know what we see is that all of us are so busy that we really don't have a touch point for our planning and priority setting. And so I hope we can provide that. Well, let me see. They say the flu is going to be bad this year. If I say that, then it won't be. So I'll just say it's going to be bad this year, then it won't be.
So what she's saying is everybody be sure and get your flu shot.
Right.
Everybody here? Doug?
Yeah.
Dunker?
We're going to check.
All right.
We're going to check. I was doing some research about why people do or do not get immunized when they're adults. Well, I think that's really about it. I don't know if you have any particular concerns. I know that we are working on a Brownfields grant application that's being submitted on behalf of someone within Gage County, and that's to refurbish land so it can be redeveloped with the assistance of federal funds. And Kim Plowsick was working with that consultant or whoever was putting it together, and we'll continue working with them. I think that's about it, unless you have any concerns or questions.
Thank you.
Okay, nice to see you.
Thanks. Stephanie Clark, introduction of new assistant public defender, Lee Timman.
Yes, it's Lee Timman.
Timman.
As you all know, I'm Stephanie Clark, the public defender. This is Mr. Lee Timman. He's my new deputy. Mr. Goltz is not going to practice law any longer and is taking a sabbatical, so we were fortunate that Lee was available, and his family is from Nebraska, so he and his wife and three children have moved back and are currently staying with her parents in Crete, but are excited to be back home. Lee came with experience in the Reno County Public Defender, which is Hutchinson, Kansas. So he was a full-time public defender doing high-level felony cases. So he can step right in and has stepped right in and is has been here a couple of weeks now and hit the ground running. So wanted to introduce him to the board. You'll see him around the courthouse. He actually has court here in a few minutes, so he's headed up to Judge Korslund's court, but I wanted everyone to meet him, and I'm sure if anyone has any questions they want to ask him, he would be happy to try to answer them.
We certainly hope you'll be able to find a residence in Beatrice. That'd be very good.
We're going to move to Lincoln, but when I was living in Kansas, I commuted 45 minutes every day for 5 years, so it's nothing new to me, but we're living in Lincoln just because that's where our family is. But we've got a house that we're going to be moving there in January. But
okay.
I'm already looking forward to working here. So
okay,
it's been good so far.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Jim Spangler, quarterly report.
I want to go on record that I have gotten my flu shot this year. So
we'll and make the, note of that.
Yes. And the health of tourism is pretty good, really. I put down fourth quarter activities, just the highlights, and I'll just highlight some of the highlights. But I'm a member of a group called Byway 136, which is all the counties along Highway 136, and we held a Trail of Treasures this year, which if you've ever heard of the Junk Jaunt across central Nebraska, it's kind of a group of garage sales, really, that went along. And that was really quite successful this year for as little as last-minute planning as we did on it. I think we had four or five places in Gage County that were vendors, and they seemed to be all happy with the number of people that it drew in and their sales. So I think that's something that will be going on forward. If any of you have not been in the Carnegie Building, I urge you to stop by and see us. We have four great displays up there now, and I love to give tours, so please stop by and see that. We did recently have a bus group called the Friendship Force that was down here. That was about 31 Canadian citizens that have an arrangement with us here in the States to go back and forth on trips and visits and overnights, and they were down here, and they had a great time, and have already told me that they're planning another trip with a different group of Canadians for next year. And then we had Farmers and Merchants Bank bus tour that was here. They're out of Kearney. And then the NRD hosted a state land judging contest that brought a lot of high school kids in from all over the state, and a lot of them spent the night. And then at Aunt Mary's, the Security Gold Club had a bus tour here. That's part of Security First Bank. So Verdella Vitrovsky worked with me closely on hosting them. And I'm helping organize two bus tours currently for next year, but we've already got, I think, four that I'm aware of that are firmly in place and a couple others that I'm working with. So for this early, I'm pleased with that. And then this week, I'm kind of wearing my school board hat as well as we interview our four finalists for superintendent. I've been taking them around the community and familiarizing them with Beatrice. On the next page is basically our lodging tax report. We go by a fiscal year of July 1 through June 30, but the first 3 months of this fiscal year have all been better than the last fiscal year. Last fiscal year was down just a little bit, but it's exciting to see we're headed back up in the right direction. In August, where we had $8,586.29, I'd say a big boost to that was the Koch nitrogen plant shutdown. Had a lot of workers spending the night in the county for multiple nights there. So that looks good. The next page is the Visitors Improvement Fund. And just to walk you real briefly through that, we've approved $55,800 that hasn't been expended yet, and we have a total balance as of October 31st of $86,443. So we have basically about $31,000 as of October 31st that's in the Visitors Improvement Fund that hasn't been spoken for. Next page is the budget. If you look at the total revenue, that's always a month behind because we have not received September's lodging report yet, or tax, what that total will be. But even without the September income shown in there, we're ahead of the game, $17,144 to $15,092 in expenses. Does anybody have any questions whatsoever? If not, I have a guest along with me. I'd like to introduce Mr. John Benedict as the new president of the Beatrice Area Chamber of Commerce, and he might say a few words.
Hi. Hi. Good morning. I'll be brief. First of all, I want to thank you for allowing me to speak to you all and introduce myself. I look forward to working with the Gage County Board of Supervisors, and if there's anything Jim or myself can do for you, just holler. We're down at the Carnegie Building. So, I'm originally from Ohio. Don't hold that against me. And most recently, Louisiana. So everybody's been wonderful. Gage County, Beatrice, everybody introduces themselves. Everybody's been great to work with, so. Look forward to working with everybody else here.
Thank you.
Some of us introduce ourselves driving down the street when we see the new director.
Yeah, he stuck his head out the window when I was walking to the post office and introduced himself. So,
but he did promise me he'd wear a red sweater with an N on it today, but I haven't.
I'm still working on that.
Christmas, but, as soon as Christmas.
Yeah, yeah, there you go, there you go. Somebody will probably get me that for Christmas. Throw the Husker at the Buckeye here, so no problem. But it'll be nice working with y'all.
Well, thank you. Welcome.
Glad to have you.
Okay, approve or disapprove Robin Stanishek to the Visitors Bureau Advisory Board to fill vacancy created by resignation of KJ Patel.
In your little packet there is KJ's resignation and Robin, a little short biography of hers. But the CVB board would recommend the appointment of Robin to fill the vacancy created by KJ's resignation. By state statute, we have to have two members of the lodging industry on the CVB board, and KJ was affiliated with the Victorian Lodge, or Victorian Inn, and Robin's affiliated with the Rice Lodge and Conference Center in Odell, but I will have Robin say just a real brief few words about herself.
You can read. Given questions, I mean, this is sort of obvious. If you already got this sheet, you know I have a couple degrees, and I'm mainly in community development in Odell, and I'm involved with the Rice Lodge. Anybody have any questions?
No, you've been active in this venue a long time,
so. So you know me, probably.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks. Bye.
Thank you. Need a motion to approve or disapprove?
Move to approve.
Moved by Lytle, seconded by Byers. Discussion. Vote. 6-0 to approve. Thank you, Robin. Let's do the committee reports before we go to the closed session. We'll get those knocked out. Building and grounds.
Okay, we've been working. I think Josie thought we'd be here a little late. We had most of our meeting this week is concentrated on the security issue that we're talking about, and of course as we look at the whole bomb threat issue and the meetings that were held this week, but we're talking about closing all the entrances to the courthouse with the exception of one, and that one would be on the east side. And it would be a situation of going back into the yard and expanding that area and putting in a security system and a one entrance for all people to come into the courthouse through that entrance. But they would have to be passed through security as they come through. And Dave is talking to some contractors, so we can try to get at least a few pro forma type costs relative to what it might cost.
Yeah.
And so we're working on that right now, and that's basically what our priority is right now. And Myron, I don't know if you want to add to that.
No, that's right. The meeting we had with Jones on Friday was a discussion about if through all of this that has taken place in the last couple of months, if we do something different, or what could we do to improve security? And I know Gus and them, they're working on a presentation to us. But David visited with some people about the bottom floor there on the east side, and basically where you walk down now and the sidewalks down in there, he would move. There's a sidewalk right up top on the east side of that, and he would a preliminary plan for discussion was you dig out that sidewalk, move it over so we make a wider entrance coming down there so that you could set up way down on the first floor, then you could have the screening station right by the door and stuff. So, and
we
then,
still do have some issues, even though they widen those doors with handicap accessibility.
Yeah,
they do meet the rules, but it's
minimum.
Still difficult for
minimum
of getting
but,
people.
But more than anything, I compliment Dave on coming up with this and bringing this up for discussion, not saying that this will actually be what happens, but this I thought it was a pretty good idea or proposal to have this. And if we decide to go with one entrance and with a screening station, it was one that to me would be very doable and very workable, and yet the cost would be minimal. But we'd make it a lot easier for people to come in, put some kind of cover over it so the weather at times would not be a factor. If we have people, I know Gus has made the comment that when we have people coming into court, we have a lot of people showing up that you just can't push them through a screening station that fast. So we need some kind of protection from the weather. And Dave's working on that, and we'll just see how it comes and where it goes.
Okay.
So preliminary discussions.
Preliminary discussions, yes.
Okay. What else, Danny?
That's it.
Okay. Economic development?
Yes. Our Engage meeting, normally we're on the Thursday, next week, Thursday, but because of scheduling conflict, we're going to have it on Wednesday, and I already told Doug, Wednesday at 4:30 next week. So, Chris, will you be able to tell Scott or make sure? You already did? Great. Okay. So.
Okay. Emergency management, EMS?
We're working on the bomb threat plans and some of that stuff. Other than that, I did have, I think Mark's here, and he's willing to give us a couple updates on what he's got going on.
Good morning. Just a few things brief that in the past here, a few weeks or a few months that's happened. We did get our recertification for our Storm Ready County, which is good to see. We filled out the proper document, was approved by the National Weather Service. So we're a storm-ready county now through 2015. There's still very few minimal counties in the county. We were one of the first three counties that were actually storm-ready in Nebraska. I think there's about a dozen now. Attended some meetings, required meetings by emergency management, state emergency management in Lincoln, pretty much a week-long's worth of different meetings. One of them was a training exercise and planning workshop, and one of them was a threat hazard workshop that's required by us to determine threats and hazards in our state before we are approved for any Homeland Security money. And just a quick note there was three things that we talked about that we utilized as an exercise to look at our Homeland Security grants. And three of the things were cyber attacks, pandemic influenza outbreak, which is in everybody's mind, and then one that I don't think a lot of people think about, but that's the Kingsley Dam break. That if the Kingsley Dam at Ogallala, the lake was full, and that lake and that dam would breach, that would flood water all the way to Plattsmouth. And so there actually is a Kingsley Dam plan in place in the state of Nebraska for that. And that it also affects our county because we would be a resource to have to respond to assist, and they would have evacuation points in the Gage County even. So 2 million acre feet of water would release out of that if that ever happened.
What would that wall be?
What's that?
I mean, is it 5-foot wall, a half mile wide?
Yeah, it'd be the wider than the Platte River. Basically, it'd come the Platte River channel and then go from there and then off the tributaries of that. And they're talking about eight, all the way in Grand Island, you'd say 8 feet of water. And then from down to that point on. But Plattsmouth would actually receive 3 to 4 feet of water and flood a lot of their community out because.
And like when the Blue Springs Dam went out there.
Yeah, yeah, just it'd be not maybe not quite the impact Rex, but I thought that was interesting that there is actually you know we did review that the dam plan so. I did get Joe Hawkins hired on board. It was a toss-up between us and Exmark, and we won. So Joe is going to be starting. We got him in place and got his paperwork done with the clerk's office. Appreciated that. He'll be working, you know, anywhere 12 up to 16 hours a week. The first big issue that we're going to get him started on, he has some NIMS training he's required to do so we can get half of his salary paid back through EMPG, and then we're going to start right on the LEOP after the first of the year. And that's our this year. 2013 is the year we have to completely rewrite the LEOP. So had an LAPC quarterly meeting at the homestead. The LAPC now is working really well. We have this Gage, Jefferson, Saline, and Thayer counties are in the same LAPC now. We only meet quarterly instead of the once-a-month meeting just for Gage County that we used to have, and it seems to be working really efficient. We're meeting all the state and federal requirements for that, so works out really good. Back to the communications issues from narrowbanding. I'm going to be meeting today again with the contractor. We're still having a lot of issues. So I'm a little concerned that something's going on with the repeater today, so they're coming down to take a look at it, so hopefully we can get that addressed.
So, are they looking at federally changing that, the narrow band requirements?
Well, and in a few years, they'll be going to a new, even narrower band, you know. But, January 1, we have to be all narrow banded, so it's a federal requirement. And they, according to them, they're going to be doing audits. So
I think it'll be changing back. I mean, example, the trains can't hear a train at Sioux City to Winnebago, 15, 18 miles away now.
We're just having... today the problem is that there's an echo in the radio system, but it's not during the day, it's in the evenings. So we don't know if there is
a lot of distortion with it.
Oh yeah, yeah. So, there's a FEMA meeting we've been having. I think Rex may have attended one last year or 2 years ago down in Wymore. This year, this time it was in February, and it's a resilience meeting. It's a project that FEMA's been brought up, and there's two projects they're working on in this area. The one in Gage County is the Barnston project. There's 1 mile of river there that FEMA's looking at that if it would flood, how would it affect the village of Barnston? And so this is the fourth meeting I've went to for that. They were not aware this time. They were going to move on with some issues, some things that they discussed. And I pretty much put a nix to it when I told them that they're building a new bridge there that they weren't aware of. So it's one hand not telling the other hand what's going on.
Has Barnston ever been underwater?
No. And I don't believe so. Not my life.
You're talking
anyway.
About federal waste. There's an example of federal waste.
Spent a lot of time on it. 3 years. I think the first meeting we went to, Rex, in Wymore was probably almost 3 years ago. And so they have the other project is the dike, which makes sense, is the dike around Fairbury to protect the town of Fairbury from the Little Big Blue River. That, to me, makes all the sense in the world. So you may hear about that project coming up again. I don't believe anybody from Barnston was present at any of the meetings we've been to, so I think I'd probably owe it to them to go talk to the village chairman and tell them what's going on. But they did, they contacted me now. They have put a stop to the project pending on them finding out that there's a new bridge there. So on the way back, the FEMA guys actually took Highway 8, go back to Kansas City. I drew my map to get back to... I assume they probably got home, but sent them back down through Barnston and to go look at the project because what they had all planned out and what they showed on the map was totally wrong. Now that they've added the new bridge, so hazard mitigation projects, that is part of hazardous mitigation money. That's division of FEMA that's doing that project, and we're looking at a couple mitigation projects. One of them, the NRD is looking at a siren and a storm shelter out of Big Indian. So we're working on that. This money's available till February. The other thing, the City Beatrice just had their mitigation project generator at the City Auditorium approved. So after almost 18 months, Chief Dakin and I have been working on that. That's been approved. They're moving forward with that. And the city of Beatrice is in the process of rewriting their mitigation plan. Matt and I attended a meeting there the other day, and I responded with some items and issues that were my concern and projects that we've completed in their from their past plan. So I'll be helping them with the rewrite of that. They hired a contractor, JEO, to help them on that. And part of that mitigation money is the residential safe rooms. There is a person here in Beatrice that's applied for that funds. And we got the sense that the Lower Big Blue NRD has helped us in our mitigation plan. They've agreed to be the host for the funding stream for this project that this gentleman's working on here in Beatrice, a safe room for his new home. And so that's part of that project. We won't have to fund that through our budget here at the county level. The NRD will take care of that. And that's a 75-25%. So he's going to get 75% back of his safe room that he's putting in his new home. Then, of course,
explain that to me a little bit
more.
I don't understand this. Why are we funding one person?
It's mitigation money has been made available for safe rooms and community and residential homes. This has been made available for the past couple of years. NEMA never had anything really in place how to do that at a local level, at a state level, so they wrote a plan, didn't get it out to
people. No, they got a plan, but what is it?
Yeah. The safe room part?
What is it?
A tornado shelter, basically, in his house. He'll be
for how much of an area? And
it's just depending on the size of his house and how many people live in his home.
For an individual?
For an individual.
So, it's not public.
For this?
Anybody can.
Is it made public so that people know that they can?
We made it public a couple different ways. The state really never, we didn't, on a local level, we had a meeting a while back when this gentleman came forward and said, hey, FEMA tells me that I can get money at a local level here. What do we do? That's the first I knew about it. The state did not do a very good job of advertising it, I want to say. I called, that week we had a regional meeting, so there's 13 emergency managers there. Not a one of them had heard of anything, of seen the plan or the project or anything. So we come back.
They build a room onto their house?
You can build a room on. You can build a room in the basement. You can take, for example, a safe room. If you want to add on a room that's, let's say, 12 by 12 concrete floor, foundation, brick, concrete roof, steel door, and call it your washroom or whatever, you can. You can put a restroom
in. Where is this property located?
I'll get with you later. I just assume not. He didn't.
You don't really need to give the address. What part of the community?
It's east part of town. And you'll never know it. The project, he hasn't even, you'll drive by the house, you won't say, I have a safe room or anything
like
that.
Okay, and then how does the public know that there is a safe room in case of a tornado? The
people in the
neighborhood,
it's not
public. It's not public.
It's another federal dollar expenditure.
Right. For his own personal house. Small businesses can apply for it, same way. But yeah, you can personally put that, and that was something that we probably been, 3-4 months ago or longer now, probably 6-7 months ago when this started. And the money's good because of the mitigation money they're using right now is from money from the flooding of the Missouri River. So,
how much are we spending to build a nice room onto this person's house?
I think his first estimate was $35,000 to $40,000.
Okay.
That's why I
will make it very public. I think this is ridiculous, and yeah. I think it's a waste of money. I think it means nothing whatsoever, and I want to make it. I'm objecting to it.
Yeah, that's why I chose not to ask the county to be a sponsor of the project.
I don't think you would have got support.
I don't. Yeah,
probably not. So. I blame, I guess if I want to put some blame towards anybody, the state, and I had long conversations and still continue to have long conversations that this is something not everybody knew about. And so now we're going to have one gentleman that's going to have a safe room in his house. Now, between now and February, we could have a lot of people come forward and say, I want to do the same thing. So.
Is February the last time to apply for this?
Because
I think we should flood the state with applications for this.
Yeah. I have copies. I can give you all a copy of it. It's just a draft. It's not even a formal plan that the state have. It's a draft plan that they're operating off of. So The county could put in for one. The small your business could put in for one. Your business could put in. Anybody's it wants to put in for these grants, and it's 75-25. And she's telling everybody there's more money there than they can spend. So
I think we should test that. I think we should flood the state with.
And I just attended the NRD meeting, and they approved to be the sponsorship of the safe rooms. So the money will all fund through the little big blue NRD, or the big blue NRD, yeah.
How much do they get to keep of the money as it flows through?
None at all. They get no administration fee. So all they're going to do is the money will come. He pays for the room, and he turns all the receipts into them, and they turn it into NEMA, and NEMA turns it into FEMA, and FEMA checks, sends the money back down.
I see so many needs of people in this community in so many ways, all the way through Gage County, that we don't have the money to be able to help them that really need help. And then we spend $35,000 or what have you on this. Yeah. I was thinking of our immunization thing we were just talking about earlier. I think of other requests that we have for needy people in this county. It just is ridiculous.
Mitigation money is very large amount of money. You know, well, you take it's a percentage of whatever. There's a percentage of whatever they've declared how much the Missouri River costs the state of Nebraska, and that certain percent has to go back into mitigation. And so you would think that a lot of that money would be pre-mitigation money would go back into people moving their houses up and but it's available. It has to be made available through the whole state of Nebraska. And very few times do people put in for mitigation money. One of the biggest projects we've done in the county is the Cortland Community Building. And that's the only one in the state of Nebraska still to this day. When FEMA had the meeting in February, they bring that up, that that's the only one in the state of Nebraska that was a completed project, was our Cortland Tornado Shelter at the community building there. Very, very good project, you know, and the village board did an excellent job of promoting and that. So
this is all federal money?
Yes.
And it comes through who at the state? Who's
NEMA.
Nebraska
Emergency Management.
And where
Sheila Haskell is the contact there.
Where does the federal money come from?
Tax dollars.
Right.
So it's tax dollars coming back to our community, is the way I always have said and stuck with it. But so that's one of the reasons, Denny, that I didn't bring that up, and I've had this discussion with my committee that I thought it was opening a can of worms by allowing that, and I'm not going to fight it. I mean, I think it's good that people are going to have them projects in their homes or safe rooms. I promote safe rooms 100%. I don't have one myself. I'd like to put one in. If I'd had the time and the funds to do it, I'd add it onto my house and made a safe room out of it.
And how about the single mom with a family who works and can't even afford daycare for her kids, and she can barely get enough money to pay for her utility bill, and sometimes she can't and has to go elsewhere to get help to do that? And how about that? Is that helping people within our community that needs it? And then we throw $35,000 at somebody who doesn't even need a room on their house. And this is totally and absolutely ridiculous, and I will get a hold of FEMA. I just think it's ridiculous.
I agree.
The last things we're doing is the, like you said, the safety and security stuff for the 911 dressing and mapping, updating the new map. And then we've been working on a secondary site for the Emergency Operations Center and putting some equipment in there and getting ready. So if we have to move out of this building at the Emergency Operations Center, we can move into another facility. So,
okay. I got a question for you, Mark.
Yep.
Did you get my email on the rural water lines? I sent you one.
End of last week.
We got rural water lines going with 6 to 8-inch mains. I believe we need to put in a federal request to have fire hydrants periodically.
I don't know if they're refilling trucks. There's one at the water tower.
One at the water tower.
And I don't know.
There's 17 and a half miles of 6-inch main for sure. And if we could strategically place those, at least on our main roads, blacktops, whatever it may be. This water line's actually going within 2 miles of Beatrice. It's going to north side of 136 a little bit, clear to the southeast corner, 2 miles west of Odell. We have opportunities here. We do not have very long, probably, to do it.
I was just assuming they probably did set that up. When Wymore ran the line to Barnston, there is two hydrants along that.
My understanding, there is none engineered for it.
Okay.
I believe federal dollars ought to be able to.
One of the things that they have to be careful with on that I can probably maybe see it depending on the pressure. what the pressure is in the line, because if you take in, if there isn't at least, let's say 500 to 750 pounds of pressure in that line, you can hook a fire truck up to it and suck the line flat if you're not careful.
That's why you don't, on an under a 6-inch minimum.
Right. Yeah. So we'll take, I'll contact Dave Claypool.
The 8-inch, you definitely could.
Should be able to. You do in the city anyway, we can on that now. But yeah, if it's a good hydrant, it needs to be 1,000. A green hydrant is 1,000 to 1,200 pounds. As you look, drive through the town, you'll see that hydrants are painted different colors. And there's a federal NSVFA as a standard for pressures on hydrants. So when you know, when you pull up with a fire truck, how many pounds of pressure at that truck to,
okay,
you're not going to suck a line flat.
Okay, so. Question. Or even on a 2-inch, 4-inch line, mm-hmm, are we not better to have,
yeah,
a fill point,
you can do
even
a fill
if
point,
we aren't,
yeah,
drawing
versus
off
a hydrant,
of,
yeah.
We ought to have,
yeah,
fill stations. I may be wording it wrong, but
yeah,
we ought to have,
sure,
fill stations.
And I'll get with Dave Claybowen. I believe he's been charged of the whole project.
Yeah.
And, get with Dave and see what we can do there.
That's all I have.
I knew there was one at the they mentioned to it to be one at the water tower itself, but I didn't know,
yeah,
if anything else. So.
Okay, thank you. Anything,
okay,
else?
Thanks, Mark.
Yep.
Okay, we have a 9:30 timed event. Accept, reject, or award bids on detention facility toilet walls, and accept, reject, or award bids on detention facility toilets. Need a motion to close all bids at 9:30.
So moved.
Moved by Byers.
Second.
Seconded by Lytle. Discussion. Vote. 6-0. And over to building and grounds, the bids.
The wall ones for the toilets.
Which one did you want first, Rex?
Toilet walls.
Okay, that's this one.
Okay, our first bid is from Chief Industries from Grand Island, Nebraska, and their proposed scope of work and their bid on materials and installation is $21,070.33. That's for steel wall skins, 18 wall skins. And I guess basically that is it.
Okay.
$21,070.33.
Only one bid. Need a motion to accept or reject the toilet walls on, was that Chief, you said?
Yeah, Chief
Industries. Or do you want to do them together? Are they both the same company?
No.
Okay.
No.
Need a motion to accept or reject the Chief Industry bid for the toilet walls, $21,070.33.
Rex, is that just for materials only, or is that installed, or what is it?
It's the whole project, isn't it?
Installation of wall skins and cost of performance.
All right, that's all the labor.
I got a question. Denny said steel, but is that stainless?
It's 304 stainless, okay, wall skins.
Okay.
18 of them. To receive new commodes, new or existing light fixtures, new mirrors, and an area punch with 1/8-inch holes to act as a grill for the return air system, installation of wall skins and mirrors included in price, installation of commodes and light fixtures to be done by others. So it does not cover the commodes or light fixtures.
And the $21,000 is for the all 18 of them?
We exclude dumpster or hauling of trash and debris from the site. And they also exclude field cutting demo of existing metal panels and detention facility accessories of toilets. Maybe these need to be kicked back to
committee
to look at, because there is exclusions here.
I think so.
Rex Amber, she can maybe help us with this.
We decided that removing the existing walls there would be, they'd have to torch everything out, so we're not going to do that. We're just going to put the stainless steel over the existing pieces.
On the inside.
So they excluded to me, it sounds like they excluded taking out that stuff, which we did not want them to do anyway. So,
okay.
That makes sense.
And this, if
so we're just covering existing walls with stainless steel then?
Correct.
Right.
Okay.
All
correct.
Right.
If I remember right, this is pretty close to what we were thinking it was going to cost, too, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
Okay. I would move we accept the bid of Chief Industries.
Moved by Byers.
Second.
Seconded by Dorn. Discussion. Vote. 6-0 to approve.
Okay. The bid's on the detention facility toilets. Probably one of the most exciting bids I've ever opened. From Reisman Plumbing, Heating, and Cooling, Beatrice. Toilets at 612 Lincoln. Demo 18 existing laboratory toilet combination units. Install 18 Acorn SBA 3315 laboratory toilet combination units. And the units include new laboratory faucets and new flush valves. The faucets are L-Troll and the flush valves are 1.6 gallon. Replacing the necessary shutoffs and piping to connect new units. Reconnect to drain and water. Haul off all debris and old units. And includes labor. And material and labor is $60,840.
Okay, and that's the only one?
It's the only one.
Need a motion to approve or disapprove?
Make a motion to approve.
Moved by Dorn.
Second.
Seconded by Lytle. Discussion.
Rick, can we have Amber come up again and just talk a little bit about it, if that's close to what you thought it was going to be? Or okay.
Good. Yes? Kathy?
And this money was already budgeted for this, or is this?
My understanding is, visiting with Matt, that this is coming out of, we budget the $120,000 we have each of the last several years for improvements over there, basically because of the fire marshal. And we've spent a little bit out of there this year, but that's where this will come out of the budget. Visiting with the committee and Matt and everything, right. That's where it's
Matt
coming out of.
Matt has assured us the money is there.
Yeah, and that's where this is going to come out of, is that $120,000. And I know we've spent a couple things out of there already this year. This will basically use up that. But we've been talking about this for, I think Amber probably brought it. I know ever since I've been on the board, she brought it up. And if anybody's ever had the opportunity to go over there and she gives you a tour of it, you'll understand why the necessity for this. And it's just something that, with a facility like we have over there, that you're going to have ongoing expense. And the board did a very good job several years ago of, when the fire marshal came down and said you had to do things, they started setting aside every year money for these types of projects. And this is another, the fire marshal is not dictating this one, but at the same time, this is a project that needs to be done.
The situation we have now is pretty awful.
Yes, it is.
To say the least.
If you ever get a tour and Amber shows you a tour and she shows you some of the angles where you can look at them and stuff, it's needed. It was needed a couple years ago already, and it's definitely needed now. They're deteriorating more and more, and this is what they've come up with to alleviate that problem. And stainless steel seems sometimes a little higher and some of these other things, but it's something that definitely needs to be done over there.
Any more discussion? Vote. 6-0 to approve. That is it on the agenda, except a closed session. We will finish the committee reports. Equalization.
Nothing new.
Okay. Finance.
Not a whole lot new. Matt did make the comment that he was going to come up with another report showing us where we're at compared to yearly budgets and how much we've got spent. So I think he'll probably have that for next meeting.
Yep.
So,
human resource employee relations.
No report.
Insurance.
Nothing.
Law enforcement.
And no report.
Road and bridge.
apparently a long meeting Monday we had. A few of the, well, you have the activity report of all the highway department down there. I think everything is ready for winter. The roads overall in pretty good shape throughout the county. I think the gravel allocations for the fall are complete or very close to it. Everything's done, caught up. It's been a while since we've been caught up that far. Employees had training with NIRMA overgrading. We now have to set out signs every time we're grading a road on either end. Reflective signs will start, I think, maybe this Sunday night.
Yep.
The crews will be going out, and we have to check their reflectivity of all our signs throughout the county. The rural water project we discussed. We want the NRD project. Any time that they're entering the county's right of way, they're going to give us and fill out a permit each time it's entered.
You want to touch on that, or do you want me to?
Well, you can. You're right down that area.
Okay.
And then the other big thing, Mark Minnelli was down. He gave us a big, and I think it'll be available. He didn't have that many, but it'll be available to anybody, a big detailed report based of all the county highways. Not all. No. Two segments of blacktop roads. What's down there? They were cord samples. I mean, it's detailed. Some highways have as much as 12 inches of asphalt out there right now. So we know what's down there. He's going to continue to work on. I think Galen was going to get together with the three worst ones he wanted to continue with to get those core samples to find out what we had to work. Some were as low as, you know, 5 inches. It's just where you're at on the roads. But it's some information we needed. So we talked about it for months now as far as which were the best roads in the county and which were the worst. So this will get us back to that end of it. So,
okay. The NRD, I'll just lightly touch on that. We feel that maybe it was misrepresented a little bit. We were told Road and Bridge Committee, I believe Chris was there, that they would be on private property if they did not get permission, an easement. They would cross over. They would go down. They would stay on private property. It's a total private property. Once they're ready to start, that is not necessarily true. They have 13 miles of our road that they plan on paralleling in our right-of-way. We feel, Road and Bridge, that we need to be notified when they're in our right-of-way. If it's a rural water project, it is a public utility. If anyone can get on at a later date at whatever cost is associated with it, if capacity allows it at a later date, then it's a rural water project. It's a public utility. They do not have the right of eminent domain, which it's used in federal dollars. It would be illegal to discriminate anyone on a federal aid project. So what Road and Bridge is requesting now, the permit stated boring across, and it was going to be just a generic permit for the whole project. When we met with them Thursday, they could still not tell us where they were going to be in our right-of-way. So we are asking that we get a permit on every time they're in our right-of-way so we know where they are. It was my understanding they popped Barnston's rural water line, 10-inch line, because they didn't know it was there. There's no record of it being there. So we need to know when they're in our right-of-way. And that's the primary change. Did I sum that up?
And I'll make a comment on that, too. I mean, part of it is just what happened with that rural water line. It's so that 5 and 10 years from now that's not just what everybody knows it's there. We're going to have a record down at the highway department that they are in the right-of-way at that.
We go to put a bridge
location.
In.
Yeah.
Way it's stated now, we don't even know where they're going to be. So, okay, that's all I have on it.
No, Terry. I mean, and basically for future, you know, down the road, if we're going to grade a road, as per se with the Norris incident, we know that line's there. We'll know well ahead of time that line's there. So that basically was it.
We had a very good meeting with them. I mean, they were very...
It was a good meeting.
Yeah, real good meeting and discussing the project again and what we felt was maybe not a good line of communication at the start, Rex had talked to him several times, so by the time Rex was done with him, they were very agreeable.
Okay, need a If there is nothing else for the good of the order of the Board of Supervisors, we need a motion to go into closed session to discuss courthouse security. And I also notice on the bottom of the road and bridge, executive session for real estate discussion. So the closed session will be to discuss courthouse security, real estate discussion necessary for the protection of the public interest or for the protection of needless injury to the reputation of any individual.
Rex, do you want to list any other individuals that you want in the
Other individuals that I feel should be involved in the executive session. John Hill will be on the board in three weeks. Terry Baxter, representing NERMA. Mark Mainz, emergency management director. Amber Mulberry, courthouse or correctional. Davy Jones, courthouse custodian. Doug Klaus, chief deputy. And then the sheriff, Millard Gustafson, will all be allowed to stay in the executive session.
I need a five-minute break.
And point of privilege to Myron, 5 minutes. We'll take a five-minute recess. Start this up at 10 till 10.
Do we want to have a motion first?
Yeah. We need a motion to go into it first.
So moved.
Second.
Moved by Lytle, seconded by Dorn. Discussion, vote. 6-0 to approve. Need a motion to come out of executive session.
Will we come out of executive session?
Oh, there.
Moved by Lytle to come out of executive session.
Second.
Seconded by Dorn. Discussion, vote. 6-0. Anything else for the...
Well, you might note the time.
5-0. Terry Juergens is absent, left at 9:45, and it is 11:43 when we're coming out of executive session now. Anything else for the good of the order? Anything else for the good of the order? Gage County Board of Equalization adjourned at 11:43.
I'm sorry. You want
Gage
to read
County
it?
Board. Gage County Board of Supervisors is adjourned at 11:43.
Gage County Board of Equalization.
Equalization.
I will not be here on the 20th.